It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 35 degrees. Today is Tuesday, December 17th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Delta Airlines is resuming its long-dormant Seattle Juno flights, but they'll only happen once a day and only during the summer. The airline's website shows bookings are now available from May 30th to August 31st, 2014. Northbound flights will leave Seattle at 6:30 a.m. and arrive in Juneau at 9:40 a.m. Southbound flights leave Juneau at 6:45 p.m. and arrive in Seattle at 8:10 p.m. The Delta website quotes round-trip prices at around $500. That's about $70 less than Alaska Airlines charges for similar flights. Delta officials could not be reached for immediate comment, but a corporate communications staffer said an announcement could be released today. In a prepared statement, Alaska Airlines spokeswoman Bobby Egan said her company has made a decades-long commitment to the community. She said technology tested in Juneau means it has often been, quote, the only airline to access the state's capital when no other commercial airline could. Delta and Alaska are mileage and flight-sharing partners, listing some of each other's flights under their own brand. But they've become increasingly competitive. Delta has been expanding flights through SeaTac Airport, where Alaska is the largest tenant. Atlanta-based Delta used to fly to the capital city. Juneau Airport officials say that ended in 1996. A Sitka woman is safe after being located by Sitka Mountain Rescue on Harbor Mountain last Friday evening. Rescuers found 21-year-old Ashley Horner Raffelli after a four-hour search through darkness, torrential rain, high winds, and an encounter with a charging brown bear. Alaska State Troopers report that Horner Raffelli was found 600 feet up Harbor Mountain above Kramer Avenue, also known as the Benchlands Road. She had lost her way on an afternoon hike. Search and Rescue Captain Don Cluding says a friend of Horner Raffelli called Sitka Mountain Rescue at 3:40 p.m. Friday after receiving a text that she was in trouble.
We got out to the field, and you know, one of the first things that we identified was that the winds were blowing high enough that we had trees falling. So it certainly added a dynamic and a twist that we don't often face.
Other factors also made it an especially difficult search.
The thickness of the terrain and everything was just so difficult, and the wind, it certainly complicated things. You know, we weren't able to, you know, get sound attraction, you know, she wasn't able to hear us at long distance, and, you know, the wind was carrying our voice.
Although Horner Raffelli did not have a flashlight or proper overnight gear, she was able to text her rescuers and let them know she could hear their voices. But after nearly two frustrating hours without finding her, Cluding says the situation became even more challenging.
And then, right on top of everything else, partway into the mission, you know, at 6:15, we had resources in the field, and one of our teams ended up contacting a brown bear. We had a bear charge our team.
Rescuers were on the Benchlands Road when they encountered the bear. They stood their ground before the huffing bear until another rescue vehicle was able to reach them and safely pick them up. With help from an Air Station Sitka helicopter, searchers located Horner Raffelli shortly after 8 p.m. Because of the difficult conditions, it took over 2 hours to carry her out on a litter. She was transported by an EMS crew to a hospital to be evaluated. As for the bear, Cluding says immediately after the encounter, he contacted state biologist Phil Mooney to report the situation. Mooney suspected that the bear either had a food cache it was defending or a den site. Mooney searched the area Saturday and found tracks, but not the bear, den, or food supply.
You know, I don't know if it's unusual. If you go back through our records, we've had bears out every month of the year. It varies. This is likely a subadult that's still looking for a good den site.
Mooney advises Sitkins that bears remain active and people should still be careful when hunting deer or storing trash. Don Cluding said he is relieved that everyone is safe.
When we look back on that mission, there's just some interesting dynamics that we don't normally have to contend with.
Cluding says a total of 24 rescuers, 4 dogs, and a Coast Guard helicopter were used during the search. Environment and health officials in the U.S. say they are puzzled by China's decision to ban shellfish harvested from Northern California to Alaska. State officials say their records don't show the same unsafe toxin levels that were detected by a lab in China. Our report comes from Amelia Templeton of the Pacific Northwest Public Radio Project, EarthFix.
China says it found toxins in 2 shipments of geoducks. The giant clams are harvested in Puget Sound and Alaska and can go for $150 a pound. China reported that the shipments came from Ketchikan, Alaska and Renton, Washington in early October. Rick Porso is with the Washington Department of Health in the shellfish program. He says his agency has pulled 2 months of records and found no sign that the clams in question had unsafe toxin levels. The toxin identified by the Chinese lab causes a sickness called paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP.
The product appears to have come from open growing areas in good standing that are heavily monitored with low PSP values. It just doesn't match up.
U.S. seafood inspectors have asked China for more specifics about the tests that led to the seafood ban. China has not said when it will lift the ban. Washington's shellfish industry is worth $270 million, and China is the top export market. I'm Amelia Templeton, reporting.
An industry representative says Southeast Geoduck clam divers have not been affected by China's recent ban on West Coast shellfish import since they haven't been fishing recently. According to Southeast Alaska Dive Fisheries Association Director Phil Doherty, several other factors have been keeping divers off the grounds since early this month. In Southeast, the state and industry test geoduck clam beds for paralytic shellfish poison on a weekly basis. And if the levels are too high, then the fishery does not open. Doherty says that's what happened the weekend before last.
All of the 9 beds tested too hot, or the PSP levels were too high to fish. So that was the first week that this China problem was starting to rear its head, and we did not fish.
Around 60 divers normally get to fish for just a few hours each Thursday if the weekly tests come up clean. This past weekend, according to Doherty, bad weather prevented divers from gathering the samples.
Due to the storm that we had come through here on Saturday and early Sunday, our boats were unable to get out. So, again, we're not going to fish this week because we did not take any PSP samples. So for the first 2 weeks of the China problem, we haven't fished, so it hasn't really affected our fisheries at all.
And Doherty says the fleet normally takes a mid-season break around the holidays, so the Southeast fishery is not actually slated to open again until January 9th.
So we're hoping that within the next 2 or 3 weeks, that there's agreements reached in China, and this is kind of all behind us by the time we get back into the water. Now, Washington State's going to have to deal with this on a day-in, day-out basis because, they want to be harvesting geoducks down there, both on state tracks and native tracks, and they also have oysters, mussels, and clams that are regularly sent over to Hong Kong and China.
KUOW Radio in Seattle reported last Thursday that China said it was imposing the ban because its inspectors had found high levels of arsenic and the toxin that causes paralytic shellfish poisoning in recent shipments of geoduck clams from Northwest waters. And officials say an estimated 5,500 gallons of unleaded gasoline spilled into the water Saturday in the small southeast community of Cake. The same bad weather that may have caused the accident also helped disperse the fuel. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Cake Tribal Fuel employees discovered the spill before 10 o'clock Saturday morning and reported it to the Coast Guard and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation about an hour later. Sarah Moore is the state's on-scene coordinator with the DEC in Juneau.
Cake Tribal Fuel noticed on Saturday when they went to open up their facility that there was a strong smell of gasoline, and it led them to discover that there had been a ruptured fuel line that was running underneath their floating dock.
Moore says the initial amount reported spilled was 7,000 gallons. However, the corporation later estimated it's probably closer to 5,500 gallons.
Saturday morning when they first called it in, they were saying there was a rainbow sheen of 100 yards, and that along the protected areas right around the fuel dock, you could see free product.
The Coast Guard says all vessels were removed from Cake's harbor and police secured the area. Coast Guard Petty Officer Jeffrey Cruz says first responders in Cake initially put out containment booms around the spilled gas.
But unfortunately, it's not very safe to do with gasoline. It's a very volatile oil and very dangerous to to try and contain. So the state and the U.S. Coast Guard advised them to remove the boom and keep any vehicles or anything that could potentially ignite a spark away from the gasoline. And then we had them lay down fire suppressive fog with fire hoses on the big clumps of gasoline to try and break it up and keep the fumes down.
Cruz says it's possible the flexible fuel line under the dock broke because of high wind and wave action in the area, but the cause of the leak is still under investigation. He says the bad weather also dispersed the spilled fuel.
The tide and the wind and the currents all conspired together to carry pretty much everything out to sea. So we didn't have much to collect anyway, because the weather conditions, which were pretty bad on Saturday, did a really good job of evaporating the product or taking it out and into open water where it was going to evaporate faster.
Cruz also thinks the danger from the gasoline has likely passed.
Lighter refined petroleums like kerosene and gasoline have a higher proportion of flammable components. They're called light ends, and those basically evaporate off very quickly, within a few hours. And so there's very little persistent toxic effect to the environment.
The Coast Guard plans to respond to Cake to investigate. Cake Tribal reported there was no longer a gas sheen on the water or an odor in the area Sunday, and vessels were allowed back into the nearby harbor. Phone calls to the city manager and official with Cake Tribal's fuel operation were not returned in time for this broadcast. DEC is recommending that no one in Cake collects shellfish from the area immediately around the fuel dock. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. 35 degrees in downtown Sitka. Snow showers diminishing through the morning with snow accumulation up to 1 inch. Temperatures steady near 33 in the morning, then falling through the afternoon. Mostly clear tonight and colder and partly cloudy tomorrow. Stay tuned for our local interview at 8:18 with Roger Schmidt and some brass players for the holiday concert. Good morning.